Kavoie Morich on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All righty, quick news roundup. One of my three presidents, ABLO, López Obrador of Mexico, he's been outspoken regarding Assange. He said that WikiLeaks Assange has been treated very unfairly, and Mexico is willing to provide Assange sanctuary. Like they are providing a number of us sanctuary here in Mexico, although I've become Mexican now. AMLO called the UK decision to extradite Assange to the US as very disappointing, and he intends to ask Biden to drop charges against Assange when they meet next month. That's July, as, quote, humanity must prevail. Assange is the best journalist of our time in the world, and he has been treated very unfairly, worse than a criminal. This is a shame for the world, said AMLO. And someone else, this singer, I don't even know, but she's super famous, Mia, she said, in this entire world, not a single war criminal has been questioned for killing 1 million people in Iraq for no reason, yet one man has been blamed and in prison for 10 years for showing a 10-minute video about it. Spot on. So we've got these politicians that kill millions of Iraqis. Nothing happens to them. And Julian Assange is... What's the problem with Julian Assange? And speaking of politicians that kill millions of people, we've got Liz Truss, the UK... what is it? Foreign Secretary. She just tweeted today, the UK fully supports Lithuania stopping sanctioned goods from Russia traveling through their country. We must stay strong in the face of Russian aggression and challenge these unjustified threats. Some people just want to watch the world burn. That's not a good idea. That whole Lithuania Kaliningrad thing could be a spark that lights World War III. We've got a bunch of either idiots or just sinister people in charge. I tend towards the second option. And Ursula von der Leyen, given I'm also a European and Croatian citizen, she tweets saying, Ukraine is going through hell for a simple reason. Its desire to join the EU. And I tweeted right back at her and I said, I would go through hell for my country of Croatia to leave the EU. How about that, Ursula? This tyrannical, technocratic, dictatorial, fascist, European, new Soviet state known as the EU. We don't like it. I don't like it. It's not good. And let's talk about mustard. There's an article talking about the mustard shortage is coming and climate change could be to blame. It says, you know, 4th of July is coming up soon. And, you know, hot dogs, hamburgers, ketchup, and mustard. That's the thing for 4th of July for a lot of people. It says, but the hot dog toppings could look a little different this year. An international mustard shortage could be making its way to a grocery store near you. It says it's likely that you will not have a problem finding mustard in stores, but the prices of the mustard you do find may be significantly higher due to production issues. Carbon emissions are on the rise, and so are severe weather conditions. So I think like earlier this week, they were blaming the bird flu on you growing chickens in your backyard and climate change. And now, you know, climate change is the reason for not having mustard. So yeah, that's interesting. Alan McLeod has put out a great piece on Mint Press News, which has been banned from PayPal, just like myself, talking about the Federal Bureau of Tweets, how Twitter is hiring an alarming number of FBI agents. Not really a surprise if you read people like Yasha Levin, Surveillance Valley, I think the book is called, and others, where big tech basically is Pentagon today, basically. Either whether it's Facebook, you know, which was DARPA LifeLock, or Google seed funded by the Pentagon, or Microsoft and Amazon today, which handle the big CIA cloud computing contracts, and they're basically integrated with the military industrial complex. So it's no surprise that FBI, Twitter is hiring FBI agents who go around suspending us and deplatforming us and that sort of thing. So check out that piece from Alan. And Chinese developer accepts wheat and garlic as payment. So as China's property slump persists, one developer is trying to entice farmers to buy homes by accepting their crops as payment. I guess things are getting bad. That's barter, basically. We're moving to barter now. It's the Great Reset. A lot of us have been predicting this, although because of the social credit system, but Central China Real Estate is offering to pay farmers as much as 24,000 US for their wheat to offset down payments for homes in the residential project in Henan province. And they weeks ago also offered to accept garlic from growers looking to buy homes in another project in Kaifeng City. So that's interesting. You can buy a house with garlic and wheat in China. And this is TNT Radio.
Digging deeper into the news.
It's the topics that matter to me.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, it's the Hrvoje Moric show streaming live on TNTradio.live. Get the smartphone app if you haven't already. And while it's still on the Google, Apple Play stores, you can listen there as well. And subscribe to our channels on Rumble, YouTube, Odyssey, where we're also live streaming. And you can, after the fact, you can stream and even download the MP3s to your devices and listen later on. I'm joined by Ken Kaufman, the owner of Stairway Press Publishers. He's quite the Renaissance man, just quite a fascinating background. He's been a berry picker, a cat food factory worker, dishwasher, Air Force sergeant, rock and roll bass player, concert promoter, author, publisher, electrical engineer, engineering manager. He's written 12 novels, one nonfiction, as well as a technical book, and his latest novel, as far as I can tell, is The Sandcastles of Irakistan. The website is stairwaypress.com. Go there and check out some of the books. I'm jealous of your life experience. Hello, Ken.
Hello. You make me sound like I've really accomplished a lot, but I have to say that a lot of those things you mentioned, I can't claim I was very good at.
Well, I don't think that's as important as just having, you know, having done them. I guess that's subjective, but if you could tell us a bit, perhaps lately, what you've been working and focusing on. I know you write a lot, and you've got Stairway Press, and I really like these. You know, I like Trine Day Publishing and Clarity Press. I'm a big fan of all these like not mainstream publishing houses. And if you could tell us a bit about Stairway Press and the work you've been doing lately.
Yeah, so you know, I'm 68 years old. I still have a day job, so that takes a lot of my time and attention. So during the day, I'm working on satellite power supplies, radiation tolerant electronics. And so that takes a fair amount of my focus. I've been running Stairway Press. It's been about pushing 15 years now. And just basically was stemmed from a passion for the written word. And really, I'd been writing for a decade or so, got angry with collecting rejection slips. I mean, I literally have a stack that's 1 inch tall. And I thought, well, I'll start my own publishing company. And then pretty quickly realized that nobody was going to take me seriously unless I published other people's work. And then almost immediately after that, I realized that I was happy selling other people's books. In fact, I was more happy to sell other people's books other than my own. If I sell you a copy of my book, I feel like I've got an obligation to you to entertain you or to amuse you or educate you. And, you know, I take that pretty seriously. It's a much easier to be more objective about other people's work. So I was able to select and work with people that, you know, that I chose and that I felt had, you know, skill and knowledge and, you know, stuff that was interesting to me. And, you know, I think that no one else in the world has published as many climate change titles as me. So I'm not saying that we've sold that many copies, but as far as having a variety of titles, I don't think there's anybody else that has more. And that started with, you know, my friends John O'Sullivan and Tim Ball and those, you know, those collection of authors called the Sky Dragon Slayers back in 2011. And I will say also, in that time, I've been watching to find evidence that the ideas presented in that book, you know, being 11, 12 years ago now, that there's any errors. And I'm not aware of a single one of them. You know, so obviously opinions, opinions can't be, opinion's opinion, right? You can have your reasons for believing what you want, but for things that were presented as facts, you can falsify those. It's just that, if we present something as a fact and later evidence proves that our thought was wrong, okay, well, that's a pretty objective criteria. And like I said, I've just been watching very carefully over the years for evidence that the ideas were wrong. And they don't exist. And I think at this point, if you don't believe that the climate hysteria is complete nonsense, then you're some mixture of corrupt or stupid. And those two are kind of bad combinations.
I'm just realizing this. I feel like an idiot. I have the physical copy. I have the physical copy of Slaying the Sky Dragon right here behind me. I bought it 10 years ago or when it came out, I don't remember. And I read it. I loved it. And I even communicated, I forget with which one of the scientists, the I Love CO2 guy. I don't know if you know which one. I don't know if it was Alan.
Yeah, Siddons. I do. Alan Siddons is brilliant. And it's interesting because he's so smart, but he's completely obscure. I mean, nobody knows him. He's very difficult to get a hold of, but he's one of the smartest people, particularly in analyzing the arguments of the human-caused climate change so-called scientists. But anyway, mentioning him is interesting to me. Yeah, I just, there some of these folks are heroes of mine, and he's one of them. Tim Ball's another, and guys that are just completely brilliant, completely honest, and completely, took huge risks in presenting their points of view when it was, when it was literally dangerous. It's not so bad now, but it used to be that, your reputation, your livelihood was at risk if you went against the climate gods, the established consensus of, CO2-based warming.
Yeah, he even sent me I Love CO2 sticker. I've got it here with me. I had no idea that was the Stairway Press. So I did buy one of your books, and I'm going to look through the latest catalog. I saw some interesting titles that we can talk about in a moment as well. So yeah, again, that's a great book. And I even used it in my courses where I taught here in Mexico. And I even had students, one pair of students, they had the science fair here in Mexico. And they tried to debunk the narrative. And I really got to give them props. These were high school students. As you said, imagine pushing against the grain as high school students in academia. That really takes, courage, because people are looking at you like you're crazy. And yeah, I've interviewed Lord Monckton in the past, Rupert Darwal, and recently Mark Morano and Tony Heller. And I've been told that you believe that science has been corrupted by an evil oligarchy and that Western academia is run by fools and crooks. And I totally agree. And maybe to get your thoughts on your, insight, nuanced view on what's going on with this whole climate and green agenda. For me, it seems just like it's the old eugenicists, Malthusianism, just dressed up in the color green again, and it's just pretty much about control. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I agree. And for young folks that are digging into this, I mean, we all kind of followed the same path, because initially, with the Al Gore movie and all of this kind of stuff, I was not critical about it at all and never even thought about it. It just kind of makes sense, right? We're going to increase the concentration of CO2 in our atmosphere, and the Earth's average surface temperature is going to go up, right? I mean, that sounds really compelling and sort of scary. So I envy the young people that are studying this, but I'm also dread the path that they're going to follow, because once you figure out that it's not even close to accurate, I mean, it's honestly, it's laughable to think that human activities are increasing the Earth's average surface temperature. And once you realize how, first of all, how easily the average person is bamboozled, and how corrupt, these people like Michael Mann, for example, Dr. Mann, he's not a stupid person. He has got a PhD, I believe it's from Stanford or maybe Berkeley, but very tough school to succeed in. So he has that PhD. It's in semiconductor physics, if you can believe it. So he's a smart person. So how has he been corrupted to believe this stuff? And does he really believe it? Or is it just a way of, you know, that he found of making a career, you know, getting paid really well, getting lots of publicity? I mean, I don't know. I would love to lock him in a room and talk to him for a couple of days and try to figure out, you know, if he knows how wrong he is, and if he's just taken a easy path to wealth and fortune and publicity, or if he really believes this stuff. Because as a scientist, or as somebody who's objective, or somebody who looks at data and evidence and try to carry it to a logical conclusion, there's just no way you can get there. It's embarrassingly stupid at this point to believe that increasing CO2 in the atmosphere results in automatic heating. I mean, just think about it for a second. If you take a CO2 molecule and you heat it up, it's going to get more vigorous. You know, heat is a property of mechanical motion. You heat it up, it's going to move more. And naturally, I mean, you just know this from your own personal experience, it's going to convect its heat energy outwards. You know, similar to thermals that vultures drift on, similar to, you know, heat waves that you see off a road, you know, a hot road, you know, the heat waves you see. So just your own direct experience would lead you to knowing that adding CO2 to the atmosphere is going to lead to additional cooling, if anything. So first of all, it doesn't do much, right? It's probably not measurable, but if the total overall effect is got to be cooling, because it's absorbing thermal energy, it's convecting outwards, taking that energy up with it. That's a cooling effect on the surface. So it's just not, it's not even questionable or debatable that human activities increasing the Earth's surface temperature, it's just stupid. I mean, we know there's urban heat island effect, and that the cities are a couple of degrees warmer than the surrounding countryside. That's a different thing, right? That's, you know, that's, you're changing what's absorbed from the sun. And, you know, what I would say about that is apparently people want it to happen because they're living in cities. The cities are a little warmer. If they really hated additional heat that much, they would be living in the country instead.
Yeah, I would agree. Like, I read Slaying the Sky Dragon many years ago. I've seen the BBC documentary, Great Global Warming Swindle. And, like, when you actually study this stuff, you realize everything they're telling you is junk. It's like warming actually comes first, and then CO2 follows. And then, you know, most of the CO2 comes from, like, the oceans. And it's basically the sun driving everything. It's out of our hands. You know, I taught a course called Environment and International Relations, and I made a point, Piers Corbin, right, the astrophysicist but brother of Jeremy Corbin, he does the weather action, and you know, supposedly farmers rely on his forecast, which he bases on the solar cycle and the lunar cycle. I bought one of his forecasts. It was like January 2013, I don't even remember when I was teaching this course, to show my students. And like, I bought it in January or February, where he projected like out into March. And, you know, I just sat there, and then he said, like, March 25th, you're going to have these crazy rains and floods in America, in the Midwest. And lo and behold, like, MSNBC News, March 25th was saying historic flooding in Iowa and here and all of it. And it's like, how did he do that? And that, well, just proof that his hypothesis is correct. If he could predict the weather like that, then that means it's the solar and lunar cycles creating all of this, not us. And yeah, that was amazing. And I think we're going to have to go to our first climate break, our first tequila break. The website is stairwaypress.com. Go there and get some books. We'll be right back on TNT Radio.
Dolores Cahill on TNT Radio.
When they were announcing this global warming threat, they had to actually turn up the heating in the conference rooms in Washington to make it artificially as if we were heating up. You know, it was all theater kind of propaganda.
Yes, that's exactly right. That's very well documented. That was Tim Wirth and Al Gore, and they picked a hearing day right in the middle of summer, and they checked the charts to try and pick one where it's likely to be hottest in the year, and they made sure the air conditioners weren't working, and then they came out with this dramatic testimony that the world was about to come to an end. You know, everything they predicted in that hearing has failed to occur, and in fact, the global warming has been much, much less than predicted, and so they've changed the slogan now. It's not global warming, it's climate change. So,
Weekends with Dolores Cahill on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Wokeness is infiltrating churches, and people don't really know what's hitting them.
Critical race theory assumes that racism is everywhere, it is in everything. These ideologies have crept into the church.
I have grown up with this invisible kind of bag of privilege.
And I know, as a white pastor, I have blind spots.
Reparations fits into the scope of the gospel.
It's a racist worldview. You're swimming in racism.
The social justice warriors say, if you're white, you are racist. And if you say that you are not a racist, then you have to be a white supremacist.
I see within evangelicalism today an attack on the very gospel itself.
Social justice doesn't have to do with justice, it has to do with Marxism.
Wokeness is now the dominant academic paradigm on many university and college campuses.
Many of our Christian universities have fallen prey.
I went to an all-black school, raised in a black context. Everything was oppression. White people are racist, cops can't be trusted, and this world is not for us, it's against us. We felt like the government owed us. I have a family, I have children, and I don't have a job. I was just, it was at the darkest point in my life.
Because I was white, would we have to divorce and separate due to my skin color?
Christianity enables people to find forgiveness and redemption. However, Marxism is completely vindictive.
There is no redeemer and there is no redemption in the religion of anti-racism.
I believe that the evangelical church today is going to have to make a decision. Are we going to submit to the culture, or are we going to remain true to the faith and take the consequences?
How the left is stealing your church. The invasion of the gospel of woke at salemnow.com.
Show me the studies.
Today's News Talk Radio.
True study. This is safe for adults, much less kids.
TNT Radio. Live.
And we're back. We've been speaking with Ken Kaufman of StairwayPress.com. Go there, get Slaying the Sky Dragon as well as other books. You mentioned academia. I want to get your thought because I worked as an adjunct professor as well, teaching international relations. And I find whether it's a topic of climate change or other things like 9/11 or whatnot, where you've got official narratives and that are not true for people who seriously study these things, I find the people around me, the other professors, and I worked at a very globalist institution in Mexico. I mean, I think it's actually officially linked with the World Economic Forum. No, I'm not even joking. It's owned by the Tec de Monterrey, where I used to work, is owned by a conglomerate called FEMSA, which is officially like linked with World Economic Forum. And they had like Hillary Clinton and Bill Gates give speeches at the graduations. And so definitely globalist, but I find that most of the people in academia are either useful idiots, like they've drank the Kool-Aid and they believe it, or you've got a second group that kind of knows something's up, but they don't want to lose their career and then the good money and the prestige and that whole path, you know, they'll be there for the rest of their life. So they don't want to go down the rabbit hole, even though they know something is up. And then I think there are some actors that are actually sinister and know the truth. Neither they're paid or psychopathic and they're pushing this agenda. What are your thoughts on the corruption in academia?
Yeah, so I agree with you. And you mentioned the term psychopath. And I do think that, you know, psychopaths tend to, you know, they have a superior attitude. So the idea of getting publicity and being looked up to as a figure of authority and that kind of thing. So it's going to attract that type of personality. you mentioned the young students, and I said that, you know, I admire them for having open minds and you know, reevaluating the narratives that are being fed to them. But I also, you know, I feel sorry for them, because once you've been exposed to complete nonsense that a lot of people just seem to accept without questioning, you know, you'll lose confidence in your establishments, you know, your universities, your government, big business, you know, pharma. You're going to lose a lot of stuff that might have been comforting to you. So, you know, there's definitely a dark side to kind of pulling back the curtain and looking to see what's behind there. You know, it's kind of like a five-year-old that figures out that Santa Claus can't possibly be real because of all of these logical inconsistencies, and, you know, having to face up to this new reality that there's just very few people that you can trust. But I do think that, you know, the power of persuasion, the fact that it works on us as herd animals, it really is kind of, let's say, scary. It's scary. You know, we are animals. We're emotional animals. We don't tend to analyze. What we tend to do is make our decisions first and then invent reasons that it was a logical thing to do. And that's just human nature. So, you know, anyone that studies what's been happening and, you know, some of the complete nonsense that is pressed upon us to believe, it's bound to make you lose some of your hope for, you know, the positive potential of humanity.
I think that's necessary, and that's kind of been a thing of mine. Is, I mean, this is the nature of evil, and we have to understand it, realize it's how bad it is, and you kind of have to go through that, and then grasp all of this. Yeah, it's dark, but then have the strength to face it and fight it, you know, and not run away from it. You know, it is depressing, but we have to be courageous to fight it and all. Fronts, what are your thoughts of what's behind this climate fraud? I mean, is it just money or power or what?
Yeah, well, it's a combination of all that and publicity, right? So if you got these publicity hands that just want to see their name in lights or, you know, in newspaper headlines, you know, they want to be looked up to as an authority. And it's kind of like, it doesn't matter what the content is, if you can get this position of authority, you're going to take it, whatever, you know, however you get it. But just think of the billions and billions and billions of dollars that have been spent with this green agenda. I mean, that's the bottom line. But it, you know, we got these convergences, you know, these harmonic convergences of power. Right now it's social media and government and you know, corporate interests. They did a really excellent job during the lockdowns of killing small businesses. So where are you going to go for your, you know, the stuff that you want to buy? You know, small brick and mortar businesses were just decimated, killed. And you've got to go to the big guys. You know, you've got to search for your stuff on Google. You've got to buy your stuff from Amazon. You know, you've got to get your operating systems from Microsoft. And it was just a huge boon for these guys. I mean, what I like to say is, imagine that COVID-19 was bad for Twitter's business or bad for Zoom's business. You know, the publicity and the data that was presented would have been completely different. So maybe they didn't invent it. They weren't smart enough to create this plan, but they were certainly smart enough to take advantage of it when it dropped on their lap.
Yeah. And you mentioned the COVID. That was my next kind of question. I was looking, because a lot of these things segue into the other. You had the pandemic lockdown, and now they're segueing into climate lockdowns. In France, you know, they're saying it's so hot now you can't have, it's forbidden to have outdoor events. That's a climate lockdown, basically. And there's a title at Stairway Press called COVID-1984. how the states of the world destroyed liberty. And I recall way back in March of 2020, I had been interviewed by Spiro Skouras, who had a great, very popular channel, independent media, which got unfortunately deplatformed. And I started using that term, COVID-1984, way back like in March of 2020. What are your thoughts on the whole past 2+ years of this crazy biosecurity state? The response has been insane. It's like living in a science fiction dystopia, like Total Recall and Minority Report. And it's just nuts. And it doesn't seem to be going away, because now they're talking about monkeypox and cholera and polio. And tomorrow, Tedros is meeting at the WHO to whether they might decide to declare monkeypox, you know, like a DEFCON 5 and lock us down again. So what are your thoughts of this on COVID-1984?
Yeah, I like the meme that says make 1984 fiction again. And, you know, other people have commented that the books, you know, Animal Farm and 1984 seem to be used as like guidelines or, you know, roadmaps. And boy, is that scary. Now, you know, Orwell, you know, Eric Blair was, he was a smart guy. He reported on what he saw. So these things are basic human nature that occurs over and over again. I can tell you, you know, I mean, it does kind of make you lose confidence in your fellow man. I remember talking to my friend Robert Farino one day, and he said, look, if somebody put a gun to my head and said, convert to Catholicism or convert to Islam or convert to anything, what am I going to do? I'm going to say, yes, sir, and I'm going to do it. And I was thinking about it. I mean, we would like to think that we would stand by our principles and, take the consequences. But the fact of the matter is, most of us, and me included, would probably go along with it. And that's what happens, right? You're going to be ostracized if you go against this central narrative. They have a lot of weapons at their disposal to destroy you. So it's safer. You know, we have families, we have people we have to take care of. It's safer to just go along. In the back of your mind, you're going, I know this is complete nonsense, but the risk of going against it is just not worth it. It is a Stalinistic type of environment that we're living in. And you would think we would learn those lessons and avoid it at all cost. But, you know, the ability to wield power, the propaganda power over the masses, is just too compelling, and it works too well. You can't expect the elites to, you know, to not use these tools, and they're doing it. And it's amazing and scary thing to observe.
And what about those people? I think there's that scene from 1984 where was it Winston? They put in his head or something in a cage, and the rat is eating his face. I can't recall. Anyway, my favorite dystopian novel was The Original by Eugene Zamyatin. It was produced in the 1920s, and I think Huxley and Orwell kind of riffed off of his original work. He's the original gangster, though everyone cites Orwell. But I'm just one of those people that, I cannot say 2+2=5. Let the rat eat my face. I'm not going to wear a mask. I just can't do it, come hell or high water. And I think there were a number of those people. Like, there's a local supermarket here, small market, fresh market near my home in Mexico here. I didn't step foot in it for 2 years because the government required them to require us to wear a mask. And so I would find these other Mexican tienditas, corner shops, where I would buy my stuff there because they didn't really care if you didn't wear a mask. And so any thoughts about sort of like pushing back against this, as you said, Stalinist sort of tyranny?
Yeah, I do think we need to fight in every battleground where we can engage in mm-hmm. battle, but it's not, I mean, in Stalinistic times, there were some people that resisted and, you know, spoke up and did different things against the state, but their fates were not good, right? I mean, typically they would find themselves in the gulag, or they would just, you know, they would check in and they wouldn't check out, right? So I don't know. It's scary. I'm really afraid.
Mm-hmm. And this is also related. Another title at StairwayPress.com is staying on during the Great Reset, which seems to be, you know, another aspect of all of this. And it's, for me, the biggest thing is this push towards digitalization, you know, the fourth industrial revolution. But we had the vaccine passports, which are then morphing into this like digital ID, digital passport, social credit system in the Western world, basically to the rest of the world outside of China. And we saw last week in China. So they got the Chinese people to start using these digital QR code health passes, which I think originally the Nazis developed. And some of these folks in China, you know, separately, there's a bank that has financial problems and froze everyone's account. It's been frozen for a few months. And a bunch of people, they don't have money. They need their money. And so they were going to go protest. And the government just turned their green health status to red. And they could not travel on planes, trains, buses. And now we're seeing how...
gather in groups.
Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts then on this other aspect of where they're trying to take us?
Well, I think it's horrifying enough to think about that happening in China, but think about that happening in Canada, you know, the events of last year. I mean, it's just horrifying that they, you know, the truckers are peacefully protesting and, you know, their bank accounts are being frozen, they're being fired, they're being ostracized. You know, this is not supposed to happen in Western countries, but it is, and it's being accepted by a majority of people or enough people that I don't know. The direction and the vector and the intensity of this oppression is just really something to observe.
Yeah, it's really crazy. Do you have any thoughts on with the war aspect, foreign policy? I haven't read the book, but you wrote, I think, on Iraqistan, which I assume is a novel touching on the theme of Iraq. I way back in the day, I had a girlfriend from Baghdad, from Iraq. And, you know, later on, it's funny, I studied graduate school in Geneva, and one of my professors of international human rights law was Curtis Dobler, Dutch-American, who was Saddam Hussein's defense lawyer in 2003. So he defended Saddam Hussein before he got hanged. In any case, that was a war started for no reason that killed millions of innocent people. What are your thoughts on American foreign policy as well as the Ukraine situation, which, you know, has the potential to turn into World War III?
Yeah, which seems to be part of the point, right? So that book, The Sandcastles of Iraqistan, when I sat down to write that, my thought was, okay, what would it really take to resolve the tensions in the Middle East? And so I'm just kind of thinking things through. And basically what happens in that book is some rogue army soldiers just, like I said, they go rogue, right? And they're just brutal, and they create a strong man that becomes a leader. And then, you know, they're able to take steps toward peace through brutality in the Middle East. So that was what I was thinking. I mean, some of these problems, I think, just are not solvable. You know, people are entrenched in their beliefs and their history and their culture, and they're not going to change. So you've got these fault lines. What really bothers me more are the fault lines that are just intentionally emphasized. You know, some of these disputes that we have, you know, whether abortion or, you know, pick the hot topic of gender nonsense and all this stuff. Because they can't be solved, they're fault lines that can be exploited, and they're exploited by our side, they're exploited by the other side. And I was just reading a book about Russian covert activity in the United States. And what they did was basically look for any chance to cause some trouble. And there's lots of ways to cause trouble. And they just, you know, made sure they did everything they could to put fire, you know, put gasoline on the flames. And we're just ripe for it. So I don't know. I mean, I'm like, I don't want to paint a really dismal picture, because I believe it's still possible to kind of tunnel underneath all the nonsense and have a great life. But just generally speaking, the way humanity is acting, it's just not positive. I would say that it's human nature to press a system until it breaks. We just exploit it and abuse it, push it. We never evolve toward anything good. What happens is we push. The system breaks down. And then at that point, you've got a generation of chaos, which is worse. But after that generation of chaos, then things can get better again. So it just doesn't paint a very positive picture for humans to be able to think their way out of these problems. It's just that there's the tools and the power are in the hands of psychopaths, as you said. And, you know, they're not going to allow, a positive. I mean, I believe it's true that we could feed everybody on the planet. We could make sure they've got a roof over their heads. We could do that for everyone that exists today, but we're not going to, because it doesn't serve the purposes of the elite. It doesn't serve the purposes of the rich. You know, too many people are, you know, like Bill Gates says, these are useless eaters. You know, we just got to put up with them until we can kill them or do whatever it is they're going to do. You know, wipe us out with some factory generated disease. I don't know. I'm actually a very cheerful person, but when you're thinking about the exploitation and the nonsense and the propaganda and, you know, the power that's held by the psychopaths, it's hard to see how we get out of this gracefully. I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I kind of have that same view, and interesting you mentioned that. Daniel Horowitz had I like this tweet today. He said, the new October surprise is unleashing another gain-of-function pathogen on us. These people are worse than any of the bioterror we envisioned coming from Al-Qaeda after 9/11. We're gonna go to our second tequila break. While we're there, you can check out stairwaypress.com. We'll be right back on TNT Radio.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
The 28th of June midterm Republican primary for Colorado's Secretary of State will be an interesting one to watch. The current Secretary of State, Gina Griswold, has been one of only two Democrats to hold this office since 1963. And the Republicans should regain the office. Leading GOP candidate Tina Peters has easily dwarfed her Republican challenges in fundraising, and she has an important endorsement from General Michael Flynn. But Tina Peters has been criminally indicted by a grand jury for illegally tampering with election equipment, among other charges, and she has also been investigated by the FBI in this matter. She insists that she is innocent and is running a massive campaign for election integrity. She describes the current Secretary of State as Gestapo Griswold and slams weaponized law enforcement and tactics to terrorize political opponents. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
G'day, Bob's Removals.
Oh, hi. I have a TV I'd like to move.
Just a TV?
Yes.
Where to?
Over near the window.
Right.
You wouldn't call a removalist just to shift your telly, would you? So why call an ambulance when it's not really needed, and your doctor, pharmacist or 13 Health could help? Remember, only call 000 for an ambulance if you believe it's life-threatening, critical or serious. Authorised by the Queensland Government, Brisbane.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
George Soros-backed attorneys include Alvin Bragg from Manhattan, New York, elected in 2021, stated that his office would not be seeking prison sentences for crimes such as armed robbery, drug dealing and burglary. Under Joe Gonzalez from Bexar County, Texas, violent crime reportedly increased by 15% in San Antonio, while convictions dropped by 17%. John Cruzat became the DA of Dallas County in 2018 and immediately moved forward with a plethora of radical reform policies, including decriminalizing theft under $750, criminal trespass, and drug possession. During his first year in office, crime reportedly increased by 15%, while total convictions dropped by 30%. Jose Garza, elected in 2020 as Austin's DA, has developed a reputation for letting violent offenders go free on little to no bail. Garza released hundreds of inmates from jail over COVID-19 protocols, even though only six people in Austin at the time were known to have had COVID-19. Under Garza, police budgets have been slashed and Austin has experienced skyrocketing crime rates and a record number of homicides.
There's no dispute. The jabs are not safe or effective. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
We are back on the Hrvoje Moric show on TNT Radio.live, talking to Ken Kaufman of StairwayPress.com. It was kind of funny. I didn't even know I had one of his books that I bought a decade ago that was published on Stairway Press, Slaying the Sky Dragon. Excellent book. And to talk a bit more about what you were mentioning before the break, this, you know, whether people are optimistic, pessimistic, or even realistic. I'm a conservative. I believe in the Bible and the prophecies and all of that. And I kind of feel like at some point that stuff is inevitable. So in the material plane, we are headed progressively worse over time. When the end is, I can't tell you that, but I just feel like we're on this long, long slope downward into tyranny and dystopia, and things are bad. But meanwhile, what can we do? There's people building decentralized structures, parallel structures, like in the old Soviet days, or, you know, under tyrannical regimes, people were building parallel economies, parallel societies, parallel structures. I see a lot of people doing that today. I meet a lot of people fleeing Canada, fleeing the US and Europe and the Anglosphere, and coming to Mexico, or hear about them leaving the cities and moving to rural areas, buying farms, you know, raising chickens, planting food, this sort of thing. You know, what are your thoughts on this sort of thing?
Yeah, I think that's exactly correct, right? So, you know, the urban centers, the urban environments are, there's a huge amount of risk associated with that, the logistics and the, you know, the effort that it takes to keep those things going. And, you know, you've got a lot of people that aren't super productive. And what I mean by that is they're not super useful. They might be good at computer programming or this, that, and the other thing, but it's not directly contributing to making, manufacturing things or growing things or creating, you know, adding value to materials and turning them into something else. So I do think that this move to being more rural and escaping is exactly a smart thing to do. It's not hard to imagine what a complete terrible thing would happen in San Francisco, you know, in all of the big cities, if the stress gets higher and ratchets up and ratchets up and ratchets up until the system finally breaks down.
Yeah, these are complex systems, the cities. And yeah, I wonder how long they can last. I live in the second biggest city in Mexico, and you know, people like Jim Rickards or others who talk about complexity theory, systems theory, at some point it takes more energy required to put into the system than you get out, and then that kind of then you get collapse. And so I wonder how long this stuff can go on, and I want to ask your thoughts about the economy as well as you see it. I mean, I think a lot of people are talking about a crash, historic crash. It certainly seems like we're headed for something really, really bad that none of us in our lifetimes have ever seen or experienced. Inflation every day, it's like 10% inflation in all these different countries all over the world. Sri Lanka just collapsed. I can't even keep up with all this crazy news. Like, you're all these new records, like all 50 states in the US got $4 a gallon gas, which was a record. And now we're moving on to $5. And in California, some people are paying $9 or $10 a gallon, which is, we're just seeing things that we've never seen in our lifetime. And then there's talk of hyperinflation even, and even a second civil war in America. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so I mean, just imagine a city like Mexico City. Imagine if half the people, half the population were genuinely hungry. They were not able to get food. So, you know, follow that line of thought with all of the major cities, and you can see that you just got huge problems. And I think that people take for granted the miracle of, you know, development over the last 150 years that's led to being able to sustain 8 billion people on the planet. It's a miracle. But the problem is that the people that made that happen, you know, the engineers and the workers and the, you know, the creators and all that kind of thing, are, that's not where you get rewarded these days. You know, your social media, your TikTok videos are what gets you noticed these days. But if you're hungry and you need to find food, your TikTok video is not going to do you much good.
Yeah, that's the way people, you know, there was that survey not long ago where they asked Americans and Chinese children what you'd like to be. And I think the poll said by far the American kids wanted to be YouTubers and the Chinese wanted to be astronauts, you know, something more productive than being a YouTuber. And I can tell you, I never even wanted to be a YouTuber or a podcaster. I just kind of fell into it. And I would say, yeah, don't do it, especially now in the environment that we're in of Orwellian censorship. Are there any other thoughts, you know, pressing on your mind or related to what we've been talking about or not, or perhaps related to some of the titles at Stairway Press?
Well, I mean, so as you mentioned, the things that do give me hope are the people that are abandoning the system. So I think there is a way to tunnel underneath all of the nonsense and live a great life, but you're going to have to keep your eyes open, and you might have to move a time or two to avoid, you know, serious problems. But if you're smart and you're wise, you, regardless of how bad things get, you're still going to be able to have a great life. You know, the homeschooling movement, I think there's a lot of potential for that. You know, there are a certain percentage of people that realize that the established, you know, the conventional wisdom and the conventional education, you know, government education and government medicine and all this kind of stuff, you know, are basically poisoning you, and that you need to avoid that. One thing I would say, I wanted to mention a book that I read recently, which really, it's really a non sequitur, but I was curious about Kerry Mullins, and he's won the Nobel Prize for the PCR test. And so I got his autobiography, and I was completely fascinated by it because he was such an interesting character and iconoclast and, you know, free thinker. So people who are looking for something that's cheerful and interesting and fun, I would highly recommend that they get Kerry Mullis's book. He talks a little bit about the PCR. I don't think there was a lot of, you know, things that blew my mind about that science, but the fact of his life, the way he lived and the way he thought, was very uplifting and very interesting. It's called Dancing in the Mind Fields. So as a ray of hope, you know, check that book out. I think it would make you happy.
Yeah, I haven't had the time, but I've been wanting to delve deeper into his work. It's strange that he passed in 2019, right before all of this stuff.
Yeah, because it would have been fascinating to see his take on what's happening and how, you know, the PCR test has been completely abused. I think if we do get a chance to talk again, what I would like to talk about more is postmodernism and how, and why it is that young people think the way they do. They don't believe in an objective reality. And the reason is, I mean, I feel like I've landed on the reason, and I'd love to talk to you in more depth about that topic and why young people think the way they do.
Yeah, definitely. We got about a minute and a half left. And yeah, and I think that also leads to this whole transgender thing. I mean, it's all related, post-truth, post-modern, where I feel like some of these powers, they want to destroy the foundations of objectivity, of objective truth and science, things that exist. And once they destroy that, they can make us believe anything that they want. And I think a lot of this transhumanism, transgenderism, is a result of all of this. Where are the best places to...
They're doing it, right? They're pulling it off.
Yeah, we're watching it in real time. Where are the best places to find you online, or best websites to visit?
Well, I'm pretty active on LinkedIn and on Facebook for some reason. But, you know, mainly just, buy Stairway Press books, or talk, send us an email to ask us what we've been reading. Because, I think I can point you towards some books that will give a little cheer in your life. We need a little bit of entertainment and hope.
We do. All right. We're out of time. Stairwaypress.com. Check it out. Thank you, Ken. We'll be, and next time, hopefully, we talk about postmodernism. We'll be right back after the break with Spike Cohen on TNT Radio.